Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Thanks so much for listening today. Interesting news from the New York City mayoral campaign. The Quinnipiac poll now finds Bill Thompson trailing Mayor Bloomberg by just 10 points, 47-37%. That's down from a 20-point gap last month. And despite Mayor Bloomberg blitzing the city with $40 million of his pocket change in campaign spending. Now, we don't want to overinterpret this poll either. The mayor's approval rating is still very high at more than 60%. But let's talk about mayoral campaigns, past and present. This year marks the 20th anniversary of the election of David Dinkins as New York City's first African-American mayor, one of the people who helped blaze the trail for President Obama to be elected last year. So let's look back and forward now. Mayor Dinkins is currently a professor in the practice of public affairs at the Columbia University School of International and Public Affairs. Mayor Dinkins, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you.
Looking back, why was 1989 the right time for you to run for mayor and for the city to elect an African-American for the first time?
Well, first, I have to quickly point out that I was never, I never felt that, gee, I can't wait to become mayor. I ran three times for Manhattan Borough President before I succeeded. Indeed, people would say to me, what do you do? And I'd say, I run for borough president. And then when I finally succeeded in 1985, and people had become dissatisfied with Ed Koch. Keep in mind that I and Sutton, who had run in 77, and a lot of us, Basil Patterson, who became a deputy mayor with Ed, we were all for Koch against Cuomo in a runoff in 1977. But there came a time when we were less than satisfied, and there was a search for somebody to run against Ed Koch. And I don't want it to sound like I was drafted, but I did have a judgment to make after running three times for Manhattan Borough President. I'm going to put it all on the line, and if I lost, I'd have zero.
Would you say that there was a lot of racial tension in the city then that is much less today? I remember the late 80s in New York, the Howard Beach incident, the murder of Yusuf Hawkins in 89.
No, absolutely.
Even the release that year of Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing, which kind of reflected the city's racial climate in pop culture.
No, I think you're right. I think that's... that was the case. And then Ed had one or two scandals that occurred in that last year, in his last term. Donnie Manus committed suicide.
The Queensborough president.
Right. And so it was, but in Ed's defense, I should point out that no mayor has ever been popular in his third term. And even LaGuardia.
Well, we may find out about Mayor Bloomberg, but we will get to that. I don't want to talk about this race yet. The media tend to talk about Crown Heights and the down economy at that time when talking about your mayoralty. Does anything haunt you from those days, or how would you like your mayoralty to be remembered?
Well, I often say that the New York Times, which, as you know, has partial obits on public figures, and given my age, I'm confident that they have one on me, and the opening graph will read David N. Dinkins, born July 10th, 1927, in Trenton, New Jersey, first black mayor of the city of New York, and then immediately Crown Heights. And they are not apt to talk about the fact that we kept libraries open 6 days a week when we had little money, spent $47 million to do so, when this had not occurred in a quarter century. And there would be mention of Crown Heights. And I sometimes point out that Crown Heights is a tragic circumstance. People forget that Gavin Cato, a young black child, was struck and killed. His cousin was severely injured by one of the cars in the motorcade that had visited the Rebbe's funeral, burial place. And then the word spread quickly that the ambulances had come and taken away the whites and left the black children to die. Now, this was not true, but this is what spread very quickly in the neighborhood in Brooklyn. And it was at that point that Yankel Rosenbaum, a divinity student, was stabbed. And some accounts read several days of rioting culminating in the death of Yankel Rosenbaum. That's just inaccurate. He was stabbed the first few hours. And incidentally, would have survived had the hospital given him appropriate care. They overlooked a wound. And I visited him in the hospital and was told he was going to be all right. So, and I might add that keep in mind that this is after I had been elected mayor. And in that contest in 1989, in the primary, I had three opponents, the incumbent Ed Koch, Dick Ravitch, who had been done a tremendously good job in the capital program for the MTA, and Jay Golden, the longtime controller. I say that one of the most articulate and knowledgeable people in municipal government that I've ever encountered. And so the conventional wisdom was that we would not win in 89, or if we, even if we finished first, there would be a runoff. And because each of the other three was Jewish, their supporters would gang up on me and I'd lose. Well, we got over 50%, so no runoff.
And I definitely don't want to dwell on Crown Heights, but is there anything, looking back, that you wish you had done differently so that the New York Times obit won't come out that way?
Well, it'll come out that way anyhow, but I have said often that I regret that I did not say to the police brass sooner, whatever you guys are doing, it's not working. It was then they altered their behavior, and they were able to contain the ravaging young blacks who were attacking Jews. But I will forever, by some, be accused of having held back the police and permitted blacks to attack Jews. That's just inaccurate. That is not what happened. But the significant thing is that occurred after I was mayor. And but in the general election in 1989 against Rudy, after having gotten 50%, better than 50% of the vote in the primary, I think the numbers are in the general election 1.9 million votes, and we won by a margin of only 160,000. Rudy was not yet America's mayor. I had not yet screwed up Crown Heights. And so the press used to ask me, why do you think it was so close? And my response was, why do you ask?
Former Mayor David Dinkins recalling 1989, 20 years ago, this summer really, that he got the Democratic nomination for mayor of New York City, 20 years ago this fall that he was elected, the first African-American mayor of New York City. And let's bring it up to the present. You have endorsed Comptroller Bill Thompson for mayor, but you've also been quoted in the past praising Mayor Bloomberg and saying you wished he was a Democrat. Are you enthusiastically for Bill Thompson?
Oh, yeah, I am. Bill is an old friend, and I think he's done a superb job as comptroller. I note with interest that the current news today publishes a poll that has him closing the gap. He's, I think, 10 points back now. But I do like Mike a lot, I consider him a friend. And it is true that I have said I wish he were a Democrat.
And Bloomberg has been so ambitious. In addition to whatever politics, you know, people may tend to talk about, no public smoking, trans fats, Plan YC 2030, bike lanes, all these things. Is Bill Thompson a visionary at that level?
Well, I think so. I am the first to acknowledge that Mike Bloomberg has done a superb job in some areas that really, really counted a lot. When I was in office, my Commissioner of Consumer Affairs was Mark Green, and there came a time when Mark had a campaign to have the billboards in the ballparks that advertise cigarettes, have them removed. And, of course, we were told that they were leased and they had a period of time, and when that ran out, maybe they would consider changing it. Well, Mike, I say that to say that there's some of us who recognize how bad smoking was. Mike not only got the job done when people thought he couldn't, but now people are used to it. And, they're pleased that it has occurred. I say this is somebody who quit smoking in 1962.
Was there a but there? Were you going to wind up saying, but Bill Thompson is the better candidate anyway because?
Well, he's my candidate, and I hope he succeeds. But, I supported Hillary Clinton against Barack Obama. And so people would say to me, well, how can you be for Hillary? And I'd say friendship and loyalty. She and Bill Clinton helped me, and they're my friends. And I thought she had done a good job as a United States Senator, and she likes children. Went to work with Marion Wright Edelman of the Children's Defense Fund right out of law school. And I've known Marion Wright Edelman since she was a student at Yale Law School many years ago. And so that was reason enough. And then they would say, well, yeah, but how can you be for the white woman against the black man? And I would say, I'm not against him. I'm just for her. And the only negative thing I ever had to say, anything that could be considered negative about Obama was quoting somebody smarter than I, who made the observation that you campaign in poetry, but you have to govern in prose. And I'm happy to say that I think that the president is doing that. I think he's doing a superb job.
Do you think that you paved the way for Barack Obama in any respect?
Well, we have this expression, Charlie Rangel and Percy Sutton and Basil Patterson and I and others, we say everybody stands on somebody's shoulders. And by that we mean Malcolm X and Martin Luther King and Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth and Rosa Parks. And for me personally, Percy Ellis Sutton, who ran with such class and distinction in 77. Pardon me, that they didn't laugh at me when I dare try in 89. And so in that sense, yes, Obama stands on the shoulders of all of us. Had Jesse Jackson not run so well in 1988, and I was the co-chair of his campaign in New York State, and we registered a lot of people of color, and I got maybe 95% of that vote, I would not have succeeded.
In fact, I wonder if there's a parallel this year. This is not to say Bill Thompson's going to win, but you benefited in part in 89 from the big voter registration that was done on behalf of Jesse Jackson's 1988 presidential bid. And I wonder if you think Bill Thompson might benefit from all those new Obama voters who were registered last year.
I think he will. I think you make an astute observation.
You were at Walter Cronkite's funeral.
Did you know him? I did. He was a good friend to me. I could get him on the phone, and he agreed to be on an advisory committee that we formed for the Center on Urban Affairs at Columbia University's School of International and Public Affairs, which at the time was chaired by Dr. Esther Fuchs. It sort of died out when Esther went to work in City Hall, but she's back at Columbia now, and I hope that she or somebody will head such a center again, because there's no better laboratory for public affairs in the city of New York. And Walter Cronkite agreed to lend his name to that effort. And I went to the funeral because his son called me and invited me to come. I thought, like many, that it was going to be a private funeral and just for his family and colleagues and very close friends. So I was very pleased to be among them.
Last thing, Mayor Dinkins, people certainly remember your election as historic 20 years ago now. They don't as much remember something else that changed city politics a lot. 1989 was also the year of that massive charter revision in the city that New Yorkers voted on. City Council expanded to 51 seats. The old Board of Estimate was thrown out by the U.S. Supreme Court as an unconstitutional way to run a city. The public advocate position was created. Did all of that matter with 20 years of hindsight? Is democracy working better in New York City than it did before that?
Well, I'm not so sure it is. I thought that the Board of Estimate was a positive thing. I and Vallone and a lot of us were in favor of continuing a Board of Estimate. Borough presidents had genuine power in those days. Today, it is different. I can only say that when we had a Board of Estimate, it meant that the borough president of Staten Island, with 300,000 or 400,000 people, had a voice as big as the borough president of Brooklyn with 2.5 million, and which is exactly why the court did what they did and changed it. I think that by and large, it's not so much the structure as it is the people. That is, the people in office.
And public advocate, that office was created. Now, of course, it's up again. Some people say it should be uncreated because it doesn't do anything.
Well, keep in mind that we always had that office. It was called president of the city council. And Andy Stein was in that job. And when I remember getting a call from Fritz Schwartz as he was trying to find out what the sentiment was for whether or not that spot should be continued, although, as you point out, they changed the name and called public advocate. And my observation at the time was, well, if you're going to condense the city council representation, that is, instead of 35, you're going to have 51, so they'll have smaller districts. And it's no longer a Board of Estimate, so the borough presidents will have less to do, and all borough presidents have very fine staffs. So I said, what's the job of the president of city council going to be? What's he going to do? And the answer was, well, he'll be an ombudsman. And I suppose that means you got a bully pulpit, and some will do the job better than others. I think that Mark did a good job when he was there. I think Betsy's doing a good job now. Whether or not that ought to continue is, again, I think a function of who's got the job.
All right. Well, former Mayor David Dinkins here in another election year. It was 20 years ago this year that he became the first African-American mayor of New York City. I don't know if you remember this song, Mayor Dinkins. This is a truly forgettable song from 1989 by Bad English called When I See You Smile, and it was the number one song the day that you were elected.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Seems like yesterday.
Thanks a lot for coming on,
Brian. Thank you.